the young lions of Tarshish are weak now. And so we are now watching on the world scene many, many nations, including America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Europe, Canada, all these other places that I've just named start to become weak. And there's a reason behind it, a prophetic reason of why these things are happening. We obviously know the global agenda. We obviously know of the insidious infiltration of many of our governments with leftists and globalists and Babylonians, and basically the takedown of all of Western society. We're aware of that. But what we need to focus in on this week is what we're seeing, especially with America and the weakness that America is now showing in its government and what's happening in Afghanistan, of what it's doing to set the stage for the Gog of Magog invasion. And in that invasion of Gog of Magog, there's a reference to the young lions of Tarshish. I'm going to get into that this week and talk about who that perhaps applies to, so we can understand the timing of where we're at in the prophetic scenario. And what Ezekiel predicted 2,500 years ago, can you believe that? 2,500 years ago, he predicted some of the stuff that we are seeing now. As we're talking about the alignment of stuff, the setting of the stage for the Gog and Magog invasion. And now here we are in this generation watching this thing get put together. And we are still awaiting a few pieces of the puzzle to get set in place. But it seems like the actors and the players involved are now getting into their positions on stage for this thing to go down. And so anyway, we've noticed the coalition of the axis of evil of the nations that will attack Israel, you know, Russia, Iran, Turkey, Libya, Sudan, Ethiopia, those kinds of nations. We've talked about that before. But we really haven't focused so much on the young lions of Tarshish, and that's what we want to kind of focus in on today. When you look at Ezekiel and his reference to the young lions of Tarshish, what you see along with Sheba and Dedan in the text is that when Israel is attacked by this axis of evil led by Russia, Iran, Turkey, Libya, Sudan, and Ethiopia, what you see is that the young lions of Tarshish take a role of non-intervention. They take a role of maybe protesting, and it's a very lame protest. It's a very non-intervention protest, like, hey, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? But they don't get involved. And they don't take military action to protect Israel like they normally would. And so they take a role of, I'm not getting involved. And right now we're seeing the mindset of that right now. We're seeing the mindset of that in most Western countries. The sentiments in America, the sentiments in Canada, Australia, hey, we just need to leave the Middle East alone. We don't want to get involved. Look what happened in Afghanistan with America. And so that place is something that we don't want to get involved in. And I understand that. I get that. I get that. When you're dealing with Islam and people who follow Islam to the T, you end up having to fight a war that's non-conventional. This is, you know, why we've stayed so long in some of these places. And then once we're out of there, they just come back and wait it out and take over. And so, you know, what's happening in front of the world scene right now is our mishandling of Afghanistan. Of course, the Biden administration appears that they're not competent. But I want you to note this. There's no doubt the Biden administration is full of incompetency. No doubt about that. Everyone gets that. And everyone's blaming the wrong thing. They're thinking it's incompetency. No, no, it's not that. It's that they were told what to do. The Biden administration was told what to do, and they were told to make a deal with the Taliban. That's what was told to them. And they made it. And we got, and us American, our government got us out of Afghanistan. Now, a lot of Americans want to be out of Afghanistan, but you don't do it the way he did it. You don't take your army and leave civilians and Americans behind and Christians behind and missionaries behind and all these Afghanis that were helping us. You just don't do that, right? And we all know that. So we left a mess, right? And of course, we knew, from what we can see on the ground that we must have told the Taliban what we were doing because they swooped in right after us and took over, took our gear, took our helicopters and all kinds of weapons that we left. We left billions of dollars of weapons there that now are in the hands of the Taliban. They're wearing American uniforms now and American guns and all this other stuff. We just left it all there for them. So there was a deal obviously made with the Taliban, and we decided to give them our weapons. And so now America is behind creating the largest, other than Iran, I would say, the largest terroristic state in the world. So you have Iran, and now you have Afghanistan with the Taliban. And we in essence, when I say we, we're talking about the American government, we created a disaster for everybody. And so, you know, this is now showing the weakness of the Young Lions of Tarshish. Because we're now in a state in America where we're the laughing stock of the world. No one will trust us. No one trusts our promises that we say to them because we didn't make good on our promises to the Afghanis. We made promises to them that we would take them when we left. We didn't. We abandoned them. And we abandoned them to people that are killing them, taking their young daughters as wives. It's a disaster. And now we have terrorists bombing themselves. I think 13 Marines were killed and other people are being killed. Afghanis are being killed. It's a disaster, a complete disaster. And then you hear about these other groups that are trying to get people out of there. And our own State Department prevents them from doing anything, cuts them off at every road. And all these other groups that are trying to get them out of there, they're trying to get airplanes into that area and fill them up and take them to other countries that will take these refugees in, take these, Afghanis who are Christians and who helped us out. So France and England are taking them in, but America's not taking them in. But instead, we'll take shipments of young Muslims from the area and bring them into America. And we don't know how to vet them. We don't know where they're from. And we don't know if they're Taliban, Al-Qaeda, or what. That's how backwards America's government is. It's a disaster, guys. It's a complete disaster. But Canada's like this. Australia's like this. New Zealand's like this. It's a disaster. Europe is like this. They're disasters. All of these Western nations that were once held a Judeo-Christian ethic are now going down the tubes because these Babylonians, leftists, whatever you want to call them, globalists, have now infiltrated and taken over the leadership of these countries and are taking the countries to a non-intervention state and destroying the country from within. America's being destroyed from within. That's the problem. We have a populace that thinks communism, socialism, wokeism is cool. So does Australia. So does New Zealand. So does Canada. They believe that this new movement of wokeism, critical race theory, the LGBT agenda, I'm not talking about people, I'm talking about the agenda and the organization or the organization of Black Lives Matter. I'm talking about the communist organization, the Marxist organization. I'm not talking about people. They think all those things are good. And unfortunately, we know the backside of that. Those organizations are purely evil. Those movements are evil. Wokeism, it comes straight from Marxism. It's cultural Marxism, basically. And so these Western societies that we're seeing are collapsing under the weight of secularism, globalism, this new type of Babylonian morality, which is nothing but lawlessness. And so the Young Lions of Tarshish are in decline and a weakened state. So before I go any further, let's back up. Because I'm assuming that you know all about Ezekiel. So let's back up and rehearse and remind ourselves what Ezekiel says about the Gog and Magog war. Most of us are up to speed on this, but if you're not, I'm going to review it just a little bit. And so that you will understand when I refer to the young lions of Tarshish, who I am referring to. And so with that being said, let's start in Ezekiel. And when you start in Ezekiel and you read Ezekiel 38 and 39, in 38 it starts giving the ancient names of who's going to be involved in the attack on Israel. Okay? And so it talks about Rosh, which I'm not going to go into the explanation of the etymologies of these words. I'm just going to tell you just straight up what these names refer to. And if you want to dig in any deeper, you're going to have to do some research on the origins of the names. But these are all the ancient names from the Bible, and now I'll relate it to their current names. So Rosh is Russia, and Magog is basically Central Asia. That's all the stans in Central Asia, like Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, and includes Afghanistan. And so they're part of that battle as well. So Afghanistan now is set up to be part of the allies in the Gog and Magog invasion, thanks to America. Thank you very much. With a deal the Biden administration cut with the Taliban and China and whoever else is involved, Pakistan or whoever else is involved, we made a deal to allow this. But again, it sets up the scenario for another piece of the puzzle of one of the attackers of Israel. It will include Afghanistan, no doubt about that. And then the Bible talks about Meshach, Tubal, Gomer, Beth Togarmah. These are all different regions in the area we know today as Turkey. So Turkey's involved, right? All of Turkey. And then you have Persia, which is Iran today. And then you have Kush, which is Ethiopia and Sudan. And then you have Put, which is Libya. Now, one of the things I want to bring out about the Gog and Magog invasion, it is a non-Arab invasion, okay? It is an invasion with these coalition partners, but these coalition partners have all a common theme. They're all Islamic. Okay, so Islam plays the part of being the glue into all these areas. Now you say, well, Russia's not Islamic. Well, a lot of their soldiers are Islamic. The southern areas of Russia are very highly Islamic, and a lot of their troops in Russia are Islamic. They know they have a problem, but they won't deal with it. So anyway, the common thread of all of these nations coming together is Islam. And of course, you know what Islam teaches. It teaches the hatred of Israel. It's anti-Semitic. It tells of the Jews being dogs and pigs and whatnot, and that they need to annihilate them. So it's their religion that's causing all of this, right? It's the religion that keeps the glue going with all these confederations. No one wants to admit it. They keep saying, oh, this is a radical interpretation of Islam. No, it's not. It's not a radical interpretation of Islam. It is Islam. That's what it is. And I wish people would quit the moral relativism of saying, well, it's their interpretation. No, no. When you read the Quran, they're interpreting it correctly. They're taking for what it is. So how else are we supposed, when we read the Quran, how else is a person who reads, you shall cut the necks of the infidels? I want to know how a so-called nominal Muslim interprets that. Because I haven't heard a good idea in 20 years. So this is my thing with all these news correspondents, and you even hear them on conservative radio. Well, this is their interpretation of the Quran. No, no, no. They're reading exactly. They're actually practicing it correctly. Okay? It's the nominal Muslims that are not practicing it correctly. It's the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, all these guys, all these terrorist groups, they're the ones actually practicing it correctly. And so I don't know what this idea is. It's their interpretation. No, no. I don't know how you interpret cutting the necks off of people or cutting their heads off. Go figure. Anyway, you have all these will eventually attack Israel. Now, the thing about it, what we have to just review of when and where does this attack? Well, it happens on the mountains of Israel. They come to attack Israel. And we want to know where the placement is typically. Well, there's been debate over it. Some people put it at the beginning of the tribulation, midpoint, at the end, and, and things of that nature. But I believe the best interpretation is that it's a pre-tribulational event. It's not part of the seven-year tribulation because it doesn't fit. And I'll tell you why I don't think it fits there. And again, there's debate. We don't have to divide over this. It's a debatable thing. And so I ended up studying all these years. For 30 years I've been studying this. I end up with this view. So here's the view. I believe it's a pre-tribulational event. Why? Because Ezekiel notes in chapter 39, 9 through 12, that it takes 7 years for Israel to burn the weapons that are left on their land. And then it takes 7 months to bury their dead, bury all the dead from the invasion. Now, I can deal with 7 months, but then when you're talking about 7 years, there's no way you can fit that in the tribulation. There's just no way. It would have to have happen like on day one or something like that. But it doesn't make sense because at the 3.5 year mark, Israel's not going to be worrying about burning weapons and burying bodies. Israel's going to be worrying about at the 3.5 year mark of the tribulation running from the Antichrist, because that's when we know he goes after them to annihilate all of them. Is when he breaks his covenant at the 3.5 year mark and goes after them. That's Revelation 12, and then 13 is the mark. And in Revelation 12 talks about him going after them in the persecution. So it doesn't fit in the tribulation, because even if you gave it 3.5 years, the last 3.5 years, Israel's on the run. They're held up in Jerusalem and they're held up in Petra. And there's no way they're going to be worrying about burning weapons. So it doesn't fit. That's number one. So the other thing, number two, is that this view of it being a pre-tribulational event lends itself possibly to the rebuilding of the third temple. Now, we know a third temple is rebuilt, and this could lend itself to it. How so? Well, the invading armies of this coalition are wiped out. So basically, it wipes out all military Islamic invasions coming from these different parts of the world. Okay. It doesn't wipe out all Muslims. That's not what the passage is saying. It wipes out the armies. So a lot of people will make up a straw man against this view and say, well, Ezekiel doesn't say it's going to wipe out all the people. You guys are wrong in saying it's wiping out all Muslims on the earth. No one's saying that. It's only wiping out the armies that would attack it. There could be many Muslims, but they're not military age. It could be older women, children, all that stuff, and still be Muslim. And so what Ezekiel is saying is, this invasion destroys all the military from these countries, is what we're saying, which would then possibly allow Israel to regain the Temple Mount and rebuild it. Maybe, maybe not. It could be the Antichrist that allows eventually the Jews to rebuild their temple, or it could be just the sentiment from what's going on right now with the Abrahamic Accords with Saudi Arabia and those who are involved in controlling the Temple Mount, that, like we talked about before, that they're already having this sentiment, well, you know, Islam doesn't have anything to do with Jerusalem. We probably need to give that back to the Jews and have them control of, at least some control of the Temple Mount. That sentiment has already started, so it could be one of those things. Anyway, this second point lends support to possibly a rebuilding of the Third Temple, but it's not necessary. The third item that is to note about the timing of the invasion, where I think we get a lot of support, is that the invasion will occur at a time when Israel's at rest or living securely because of military strength. And that's the term of living in unwalled villages. Currently, right now, Israel's cities, its towns, its little provinces, up and down the whole country, they do not have walls around their cities and things of that nature. Oh, there is a wall, but that wall is not around their cities. It's on the barrier, the border between what they call the West Bank in the world, or what we call Judea and Samaria, where the Palestinians are in that area. There's a wall that Israel had to construct. Why? Because of terrorism, to stop the terrorism. But that wall is to keep terrorists out. It has nothing to do with having their villages walled around. So you can't make that argument that, oh, Israel still has walls around it, so it doesn't satisfy Ezekiel. That's not what Ezekiel's talking about. The Hebrew word is batak, which simply means security. And if you read Dr. Fruchtenbaum, he notes that this is not security due to a state of peace, but a security due to confidence in their own strength. And that's what we would describe as military strength, right? They have batak, or security, because of their military. And you know their military is grade A. It's very good. And so Israel has a lot of confidence dealing with their terroristic friends that live around them, in knowing that they can take care of business if they have to. Well, that's what Ezekiel described is a good description of Israel today, obviously. I mean, if you look at all the wars Israel fought since its founding, well, it takes care of business every time, whether it's 1948, 1967, 1973, all the intifadas and all that. They take care of business. So Israel does live with batak. It's a military security, right? And basically a confidence that they can repel pretty much an Arab invasion or a non-Arab invasion. And so that satisfies Ezekiel. And the fourth one that I want to point out about when is Ezekiel notes that it's in the latter years or in the last days. And a lot of people misinterpret that. It's true that the tribulation is called the last days, but also the last days stretches beyond the 7-year tribulation. It's not confined just to the tribulation. The last days refers to even the age in which you and I live. We would call that the church age. And so we're living in the last days. You've heard prophecy teachers talk about that. And I want to explain that, because they'll say, well, see, Ezekiel says it's happening in the last days, so it can only happen in the 7-year tribulation. That's not right, because the last days expand past that. So let me explain that real quick. We've got to go to Matthew 24 in the Olivet Discourse, and we're going to look at verses 3 through 7. And it says this, now he sat on the Mount of Olives. The disciples came to him privately, saying, tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming? And what will be the end of the age? So basically, they were asking three questions. Matthew doesn't report it, but the other passages like Luke and Mark 13 report the other third question. The other third question is, what's the sign for the destruction of the temple? And in this passage, they're saying, what's the sign of your second coming? That's what the reference is to. And what's the sign of the end of the age? And it's the third point that I want to point out. That's what's important for us to understand in understanding the term last days. So let's focus in on that. So basically the question, what shall be the sign of the end of the age? Now they were talking about the age they're currently living in. And again, we have to know a little bit of the background and how they spoke back then to understand what question they're asking. So the Hebrew background on this is to understand how they understood the word age. Now, some of your translations will say end of the world. That's a mistranslation. It's the end of the age, end of a certain time period. It's not the end of the world. That's wrong, because that gives the idea that the world's going to end. The world doesn't end. Ages end and a new age is begin. So in the Hebrew mindset, the mindset was this. They were basically living in the age right now, and the next age to come was what they considered the Messianic age. The age they lived in and the age to come. So in their mind, there was two ages. The one they're in and the next one, the Messianic age. So when they say, what is the sign of the end of this age? It's talking about the age we're living in. From their time, even up to this day. Okay? So, that's the question. So Jesus answers it, and he tells them, okay, this will be the sign that signals that the end of the age has begun. Now, why did I add that has begun? Because he indicates this with his response. Now this is important to understand. He doesn't say that this sign will be the sign for the end of the age. He says that the sign will signal that the end of the age has begun, which indicates that there will be time given. Now, I'm going to explain that in just a little bit. And so what Messiah was telling them is that this sign that I'm going to tell you guys is going to tell you when the last days start. And when the last days start would be the beginning of birth pains. Okay? So this is how Messiah is explaining the birth pains and the delivery. Okay? So he's using an image of a pregnant woman. And what it is he's basically saying the last days are going to start with this sign and are going to continue on, and you're going to have the contractions, the birth pains, all the way through. Now, what it's saying is eventually the woman will deliver. Okay? And when the woman delivers, it's like Rosemary's Baby. It's bad. So what you have to think about is this. The delivery of the baby is the tribulation. Okay? That's the so-called Rosemary's Baby that gets delivered. So the delivery happens, the delivery of judgment happens in the seven-year tribulation. That's when God unleashes his judgments. Okay, that's the delivering of the baby. So the time before that is the contractions. Right? It's the contraction period where the woman's about to give labor. So he explains the last days in two phases. You're going to have the contraction period, and then you're going to have the birthing period, the delivery period. You and I are considered in the last days. That's correct biblically. And we're in the phase of the birth pain phase. We are exempted from the delivery phase, if that makes sense. We're exempted from the tribulation. But we're not exempt from the birth pains because we've already seen a lot of birth pains. Okay? I'll talk to you about the big signal. What was that birth pain that he talked about that signaled that the last days has begun? So, back to the text. So before Messiah answers and tells them what this sign will be, what the signal will be, he tells them first, negatively, what will be the non-signs. Because people will look to these things and think they're signs, but he's saying, no, let me tell you something. In this age that is to come, or that you're living in, and will continue on, there's going to be non-signs. I don't want you running after these things and thinking that these are signs of the end. Okay? So in verse 4, he says this, and Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you. Okay? So why does he state that? Because people will try to deceive you and I, saying this is a sign, that's a sign, that's a sign, and it's not. And so part of Satan's deception is to get people to look after wrong signs. They'll be looking at blood moons. They'll be looking at this and that. And all those are non-signs. In fact, a lot of them are counterfeit signs. You have to know that. And so he says this, for many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ or I am the Messiah, and will deceive many. Now, here's the interesting thing about this. Before the Messiah, before Jesus came and declared himself Messiah, no one had done that before in history, okay? Never had been done in history. But after Messiah left and went back into heaven, ever since then, there's been all kinds of Jewish and Gentile people claiming to be the Messiah. Interesting, it never happened before Jesus, but it happens after Jesus up until this very day. There's crazy people out there claiming to be Jesus, and there's always been false messiahs on the Jewish side. There's always been false messiahs on the Gentile side. So just like Jesus said, it has happened. But he says, when you see that, that is a non-sign. That will be the general discourse of the rest of the time in which you live. So don't look at it as a sign. That will just be a very common thing that continues on. And then he notes a second thing, verse 6. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass. But the end is not yet. So what are you talking about? What is he talking about when he talks about you will hear of wars and rumors of wars? Well, for the last 2,000 years, there have been wars and rumors of wars. And what he's referring to is regional and local wars and fights and skirmishes and things of that nature. That you're going to hear about regional wars and even rumors of wars, but don't take regional wars as a sign of the end. Even though war is bad, it is not a sign of the end. So for the last 2,000 years, that's what history has shown. There's been regional skirmishes, wars, and rumors of wars all over the planet. So that's the general course of how things will happen. Okay, that's the second non-sign. Don't look to false prophets and teachers saying that they're the Messiah, and don't look at regional wars as a sign of the end. Those are non-signs. That's why he says, but the end is not yet, or the signal for the end is not yet. But then in verse 7, things change. And in verse 7, he gives the signal. And here's the sign. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. Okay? There's the sign. And then he couples the sign with other signs. For there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginnings of sorrows, or it should be interpreted, birth pains. Okay, so in verse 7 and 8, Messiah clearly states the sign for the end of the age, of when the last days begin. And this is important, okay? And he says, for nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. Now, we all know about famines. We all know about pestilences. We have dealt with a pestilence the last few years with the stupid Wuhan China virus that was in a biotech lab that was created in a lab to kill people, obviously, and that's done its job. And whether it was leaked or released on purpose, I believe it's released on purpose to usher in the Great Reset. But nonetheless, I do digress. We have seen pestilences, haven't we? We've seen famines. We've seen earthquakes. If you watch what's happening with earthquakes, they're increasing every week. More intense, more frequent. So we see that. But what is this idea of nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom? Well, that's the key right there. That's the key. So it's that key along with these other factors that will continue on as birth pains of a woman. Okay? Well, here's what we have to understand about nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. So this sign, nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, is what we call a Jewish idiom. There's a background to this. So you just can't just read it in your Bible and not understand the Jewish background. This is the problem with a lot of commentaries. A lot of your commentaries are written by Gentiles who don't know the Hebraic background of things. And so when you see these passages, they're full of Jewish idioms all over the place, right? And Jewish idioms are all through the Gospels, all through the New Testament, and obviously in the Old Testament, but they're idioms, which means that there's a colloquial saying that everybody knew what it meant when they said something. Like when we say it's raining cats and dogs, you don't believe that's really raining cats and dogs. You believe that, boy, it's raining really hard, right? That's a colloquialism. That's a idiom that we use here in America. It's raining cats and dogs. Okay? So when he says nation rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, that is a Jewish idiom. And they used a lot, it was used a lot in that day by the rabbis in the synagogues. Okay? So he's using rabbinic language. And what he is saying is that when this happens, that's when the last days begin. Okay? So what is it? Well, that term refers to world war. Okay? This is completely consistent with the Jewish writings in the first century. If you look at one of the Jewish writers from the first century, Zohar Kadash, he states this, at the time war shall be stirred up in the world. Nation shall be against nation and city against city. Much distress shall be renewed against the enemies of the Israelites. Bereshit Rabbah states this, "If you shall see the kingdoms rising against each other in turn, then give heed and note the footsteps of the Messiah." And so that's a few examples of how they talked. This actually was developed by the rabbis using several passages in Scripture to get the term nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. And they would say, when you see these things like that begin to happen, when you see world war, then the Messiah will come. That was how they interpreted that, okay? And so they taught about a worldwide conflict, not just a regional conflict, but a worldwide conflict. And I don't have time to go into what passages they used out of the Old Testament, but they did base it on passages in the Old Testament. Okay, well then Jesus comes and he actually corrects the idea just slightly. He uses the term, but he corrects it. And so he says, when world war occurs, that does not signal the coming of the Messiah, because the Messiah has already come. It signals the end of the age has begun. So he corrected it. So they would say, when world war comes, the Messiah comes. They're wrong on that. When world war comes, the Antichrist comes. This is actually setting them up for the Antichrist. So when Jesus corrects it, he already come. He says, no. The correct interpretation of that is world war signals the beginning of the end, the last days. And so that's how he does it. And he basically says that this will be a birth pain, and along with the other signs will accompany this. And that's how we know that we're in the last days. Okay, so when did this happen? When was the first time in human history that we saw a global or world war? It's simple. It was World War I, 1914 to 1918. World War II was just simply a continuation of World War I. But I want you to think about this. World War I and World War II had a significant impact on the Jews as well. So it impacted the Jews in World War I, having to do with creating the mindset of Zionism for the Jews to go back into their land. Remember the Balfour Declaration and all that stuff. And so it had an impact on them, especially with the Zionist movement from World War I. Then World War II led to the reestablishment of the Jewish state after the Holocaust. And so both world wars had an impact on the Jews specifically. And so, basically, since World War I, history, according to the Messiah, according to Jesus, has entered the last days of the church age. So it is correct to say that we are in the last days. It's not just a euphemism. It is biblically accurate to say that we're in the birth pain stage of the last days. And the last days extend to the end of our age and into the tribulation, which is the delivery state of the woman and the delivery of the judgments in the last days. So that's how we're to see that. So basically, guys, the sign has been given. So when Ezekiel says that this war will happen in the last days, we know it couldn't have happened until World War I happened. So now the signal has been given, last days has started. So from that point on, until the tribulation, somewhere there will be the Gog of Magog invasion. Okay? So it's a pre-tribulational event, but I didn't say it's a pre-rapture event. The rapture's not associated with any event. So we could be raptured tonight and not see the Gog of Magog invasion. But to be biblically accurate, we're only promised to be raptured prior to the tribulation. So it is a possibility if the Lord delays and raptures us closer to where the tribulation begins, that we could see the invasion of Gog of Magog on Israel. It's very possible. And you have to have the other narrative. We could be raptured and not see anything. But I do believe that's why it's a pre-tribulational event. And it sets a lot of things in stages for the rest of what happens in the tribulation. Okay. With that being said, now let's move into understanding the young lions of Tarshish. Now, when you read Ezekiel 38 and 13, it says this, Sheba, Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish, and all their young lions will say to you, have you come to take plunder? Have you gathered your army to take booty, to carry away silver and gold, to take away livestock and goods, to take great plunder? Now, these are the people who are sitting on the sidelines in the invasion. It's real easy to note who Sheba and Dedan is. Sheba and Dedan are basically northern Arabia, or what we consider Saudi Arabia, okay? And so we see Saudi Arabia now in this Abrahamic Accords kind of siding with Israel right now. And so if that continues, they take basically a non-intervention. They don't attack Israel, they just don't intervene. They don't get involved, which makes sense, right, in today's understanding. But then we want to focus on the merchants of Tarshish and all their young lions, what we want to focus in on. Well, the merchants of Tarshish, where is Tarshish? You have to identify where Tarshish is at. Well, there's debate about this. Some people believe that a strong case can be made for it being England. And obviously, England controlled the area of England or Western Europe, Spain. There's a particular place in Spain that had a harbor called Tarshish. Some people believe it's that. Or it could be just in general Western Europe, that it's the merchants of Tarshish, that it could include all of Western Europe. And I think that's a very good interpretation. Again, remember, we're dealing with idioms. Young lions is a Hebrew idiom, and it refers to the nations that come out of Tarshish. So if we believe, and I think there's good a precedent to believe that Tarshish is Western Europe, would include Spain, Portugal, England, France, all those Western countries. Well, think about all the countries that were birthed, those nations that were birthed out of those particular countries. Okay, well, that's pretty easy to start thinking about. That would include nations like Canada, America, Mexico, because Spain is involved in that, Central America, South America. It would include Australia, it would include New Zealand, it would include South Africa, and other different various parts of the world that were settled by Western Europe. And it would also include Europe as well, okay? Tarshish being Western Europe. Not Eastern Europe, but Western Europe, okay? It's important to distinguish between the two. So anyway, that would include the places that you and I live. And you and I shouldn't be shocked when we see the decline of Australia and the decline of America, the decline of Canada, the decline of South Africa, or Central America and South America. We shouldn't be shocked by that. Because what's happening is the young lions that were birthed out of that nation or the region of Tarshish is becoming weak. Because they have been infiltrated and taken over by Babylonians, and they're destroying the countries. I want you to think about, like, you know, we talked about Afghanistan, what America's doing. Could you imagine a day where America just totally botches a whole thing like that in Afghanistan? And then you find out that they're cutting the deal with the Taliban and stuff like that. That means we're done. That means America is in a weakened state. It doesn't mean that our military's weak. It means that our leadership, our government's weak. The kind of people running America's government are crazy. And same thing with Canada. You guys in Canada who are watching it, that Trudeau guy, he's off the chain. That guy's crazy. He's a little dictator. Macron in France, you guys living in France, Macron's a little dictator. You guys living in Australia, what's going on over there? I know what I know. It's crazy. They're running a dictatorship in Australia. I mean, think about that. Think about New Zealand, how crazy they are. I'm talking about the leadership, not the people. Think about it. Look what's happening in South Africa. All of that. Basically, the strong nations that were birthed, the young lions that were strong, are now becoming weak and won't do anything because they're having their own internal breakdown. And so they can't address things that are going on in the Middle East. They can't address what's going on with Israel. They can't address Russia or China. In fact, China is probably in America's back pocket as we speak. They're the ones controlling everything. And so at the end of the day, you know, America's creating the largest terror state. America's all involved in wokeism, CRT. You know, it's crazy. And now we're seeing in the young lines of Tarshish this mandate in vaccines and masks and them going crazy on that. I mean, I think about this. You guys living in Australia, there's a manhunt for some guy that sneezes in an elevator. Can you believe that? That's crazy. Helicopters circling neighborhoods, telling people to get indoors. And then I saw a new article about Australia granting a reward for fully vaccinated subjects. And basically, well, you know what the reward is? One extra hour outside from your home. Are you serious? They're like in jail. I mean, it's crazy. And then we hear in Australia about quarantine camp facilities being constructed in Australia. Well, by the way, the CDC had the camp reference in one of their articles on the CDC of making camps here in America for the unvaccinated. So we're going to be joining you, Australia, pretty soon about that. But anyway, this dystopian military enforced lockdowns that you see in Australia, and I mean, despite less than 5 COVID deaths a day, right? They're going to do a lockdown, and New Zealand goes on lockdown for one guy having for having COVID. We're going to lock the whole country down. Insane. But when you lock the whole country down, what do? You're weakening the country. You're going to destroy the economy like they've done in America. You're going to destroy people, mental breakdowns, health breakdowns, all that stuff. And now we have people in America now, and I don't know about your other countries, who are refusing health care for unvaccinated people. It's insane. So we're breaking down. The young lines of Tarshish are breaking down. We're watching the collapse of America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, all these other countries that were birthed out of Tarshish are collapsing. No wonder that when the Ezekiel invasion happens, the Gog and Magog invasion happens, that the young lines of Tarshish can't do anything. We're not going to get involved militarily. You know why? Because we've shut down our military. We've pulled out of Afghanistan. We're impotent at this point in time. We're more worried about whether or not we get your pronoun right, or whether we're calling you a guy or a girl. That's what we're worried about. That's the kind of junk we're focused in on in here in America, or critical race theory, or whatever, or changing someone's biology to fit how they feel about themselves. That's what we're worried about. But see, understand that Satan is breaking down the young lines of Tarshish, which all had most of them had a Judeo-Christian ethic. He's breaking them down morally. That's what's happening. See, what's happening in Australia, New Zealand, America, and the government is a moral breakdown. We have very immoral people running things. We have people that love to make people slaves. We have people that love totalitarian states. They love it. They can't deal with the power. It's too tempting for them. And so they seize power. And that's what they're doing. And they turn into these little dictators. And now what they're doing, as you already know, they're using the companies to enforce rules that the government can't enforce. That's called fascism. So they're working through the businesses, I should say, to promote wokeism, to promote critical race theory, to promote the LGBT agenda instead of the government doing it, because the government knows it can't go against our freedom of religion. So they're making the companies do it. And the company's saying, well, you can't work here if you don't comply. You can't work here unless you're vaccinated. That's illegal. You can't tell people that. That's crazy. That goes against their rights. And people just, okay, whatever, I'll just comply with you. No. We don't give up our rights for illegal things that the government or a business is doing. We don't do that. That's crazy. But people, unfortunately, have been brainwashed decades after decades through the public schools and universities and the system that the Babylonians have created. And it's created a breakdown morally. It's caused a breakdown in courage. It's caused a breakdown in bravery, and it's caused people to seek physical comfort and security, peace and security, rather than freedom. So people right now are completely content to give away their freedom for a counterfeit peace and security. I think I read that somewhere, right? I think the Apostle Paul said it somewhere. That's right, he did, and that's exactly what's happening. I mean, think about this. I just saw videos going on in France. This is how crazy little Macron is. they're denying people food and water without a vaccine passport. I mean, you got these videos here in France of people trying to go into a supermarket and they're being blocked because they're unvaccinated. What? That's crazy. But that's why we're collapsing. So folks, when you read about these passages and you see about the young lions of Tarsus, folks, we're there. Or at least we're getting there. And I'm not saying that the Gog and Magog invasion is going to happen tomorrow. I'm just saying it's getting set up. And we're seeing the decline of the Western society because they can't get to globalism without destroying Western society. And therefore, the young lions of Tarsus are having their fangs removed. They're being declawed. They can't do anything. They're becoming impotent. And I hate to say it as an American. I'm watching what's happening here in America. And prophetically, we're not going to be able to stop this. This is what we call the destruction of Western civilization. And it's happening. Now, you are not to go into the corner, get into the fetal position, and cry. Your job is to recognize what's happening, because prophecy is what? Meant to prepare us, not scare us. You have a job to do. I have a job to do. And you need to be about your Father's business. You have to ask yourself, what would God have me to do in these last days? Okay? And we already know the marching orders with the Great Commission. I've said that before. But what specifically are you supposed to do? Right now is not a time to sit back on the sidelines and not do something. You're going to have to get involved, whether it's discipleship or standing for the truth, saying something, you know, whatever it might be. You're going to have to be willing to lose your life in order to gain it. And that's where a lot of Christians are going to have to realize your freedoms you need to fight for, but eventually they'll be taken away from you, right? And you're going to realize that you're going to lose your life here. Not physically, but you're going to lose your economic ability. What if you can't work at your job? What if they say you're not woke enough, right? What if you don't have a good ESG score, and so the bank won't loan you any money to buy a house or buy a car? See, your finances are going to be hit by it. And so you're going to end up losing your life, but you, as Jesus said, will gain it. So you want the abundant life. That's what we're after. We want to live the abundant life. Well, if you want to live the abundant life, you got to be willing to die to self, take up your cross daily, and be willing to lose things in this life. The material possessions is what I'm talking about. And if you can do so, you can stay on the course, stay obedient, stay in submission to the Lord, and the Lord will see you through all this whole mess until the day he calls us home. You got to remember that. He's not going to abandon us. He's not going to leave us out in the lurch. You know he doesn't do that. So your idea is we got to trust. We got to obey. And he will take us through this dark night. And remember this. Like he said always, when you see these things begin to happen, you should be happy about it. You should be joyful. Why? Because he says, lift up your heads, look up in the sky, because I'm coming back. So the signal has been given. The last days have started. We're in the last days, and we don't know how long it goes in the birth pains. But the good news, Jesus is coming back, and he's coming back to rescue you and I and take us home.